This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Brandon Gaudin's back with us from Westwood One. He's been awesome calling the games. I kind of want to go back to all the games that you did, you know what I mean, on last weekend's games, and Thursday and Saturday. Can we like go through the games that you called? I mean, you saw some really good ones. Like the one was that Houston Michigan game. Is that about right?
Yeah, that was the headliner. I mean, it wasn't a great game throughout, but the last 2 minutes and certainly that last shot by Jordan Poole was one of the great moments of this tournament. That was insane and a lot of fun to be a part of.
Right. So, I mean, that shot was crazy. Were you surprised that that they didn't guard the inbounds better with, like, a bigger man?
That's exactly the point that we were making after the game. I don't care if it's a 3'7" midget. Just put somebody on the ball when it's being inbounded. And, look, Kelvin Sampson knows more about basketball. I mean, he's forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. So I'm not going to act like I'm a better coach than him, but I was very surprised that you don't at least put some pressure on the ball, because what it allowed them to do is just throw an easy pass right to midcourt and save a couple of seconds, and there was only a few seconds left on the clock, so then you allow the perfect pass to midcourt, one dribble, pass to the wing, and a decent look, and the shot went in. Hindsight's always 20/20, but yeah, I mean, that to me was the no-brainer, is why did they not put any pressure on that inbounder?
I thought, to be honest with you, that Houston played him really well, and I thought that kid Gray is just a freak. What a little talent he is. I mean, I don't think anybody had ever heard of him before until, like, you know, frankly, a week was left in their conference season, and they started playing all those big games like against Wichita and Cincinnati and showing what he was made of.
Yeah, and he had 39. He had 39 in that first-round game against San Diego State. I mean, he was hitting everything, and he hit the last two shots of that game to send him into the second round against Michigan, and he hit some big shots in that game too. The only thing I would say is that he had some pretty good pieces around him, and I felt like sometimes late in that game he forced some shots. But that's, I guess, you know, in that situation, NCAA tournament, it's tough to second-guess your best player taking the ball and wanting to take over the game. I just wish that in some certain spots against the Wolverines, he would have tried to get some other players involved. But bottom line is, yes, he caught the attention of a lot of people, and he's an excellent player.
I mean, you called that the game against San Diego State. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then
yes.
I thought his last play, that when he went into the trees and did that circus whip around spin English shot off the glass, I mean, that was a hell of a play by that kid.
It was unbelievable, because when he put it off the backboard, I thought that's going to hit the underside of the rim. But you said it, there was so much English on it. He knew how to spin that. It hit the bottom right of the backboard, hit the rim with such spin and at such an angle that then it somehow went forward and got enough momentum to get over the rim and go in. And you should have seen, I mean, maybe you did, the look on the two defenders, those two trees, as you called them, in there for San Diego State. They just could not believe it. They thought that they were either going to block the shot or he was going to hit the underside of the goal or the backboard. When that went in, they were just so dejected. It really was an amazing individual effort.
Is that kid done playing college ball?
I think, yeah. So he's done with college ball. I think he's a kid that I can't imagine that he'll be able to do anything in the NBA, but I think that's the type of kid that if he keeps his head on straight, could go over and make a lot of money over in Europe. I mean, he's that type of a scorer. I'm not going to act like I'm a scout, but I mean, I think we've seen enough basketball at this point to know that his game does not really translate. He doesn't have amazing athletic ability that would translate, and he doesn't shoot it quite well enough from three and he's not big enough to be one of those big combo guards in the NBA, but I think he's a guy who can go overseas and make six figures for a number of years.
Yeah, I do too. So Michigan wins that game and gets lucky. That's exactly what happened. I mean, I won't deny they earned it. They played well, whatever. They played tough in the whole first two games, and they killed Montana. But that game against Houston, they just wouldn't die. And I thought Houston had them by the throat. And then I thought that play was, you know, brilliantly played and called and executed. They brought it up. He got no one guarding him. He threw it over to Poole. He had a 35-40 footer, and the kid jacked it, and it went in. But now you've heard a lot of people, Brandon, say that they're automatic because they're, you know, they won that game and they're destined for the Final Four and they're so great and it's a done deal. Like, I've heard all that about Kentucky and Michigan that I can handle. Are you buying all that?
Well, I don't think so. Here's why. I mean, the two most impressive, well, I should say three most impressive performances team-wise I've seen in the tournament was Clemson totally dismembering Auburn. I mean, that was unbelievable. Obviously, what UMBC did to Virginia, but the other one is what Texas A&M did to North Carolina. And that's who Michigan has to face next is Texas A&M. So I don't – this is not going to be a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, a lot of the experts I've heard are taking Texas A&M in this game. And if you get past that, you likely have a Gonzaga team that's playing really, really well. So, look, can Michigan get to the Final Four? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that that's possible. I don't know that it's likely at this point. The guy, though, that needs to step up for Michigan is their big man, Mo Wagner. He's kind of the heart and soul of that team, and he has not been playing up to his potential so far in the tournament. If they can get him clicking and work everything through him offensively, then they become a much tougher team to beat, I think, than we saw against Montana and against Houston.
So, Brandon, you saw and called as well the Kansas-Penn game and the Seton Hall-NC State games, and then Kansas beating Seton Hall and handling their business. If you were to gauge, because you and I have talked about this team before last year, this year, going into the games last week, that, you know, I love Graham. We talked about him. Do you believe that, because they've never had much luck, this Self guy. He's had luck once, and then every other time he reminds me of Izzo. He's just, they've had failings. Do you buy into this Kansas team this time around with Graham and what they have, that they're capable, or do you think they just have a nice little draw right there with Clemson, and then their problems will start after that?
I think, yeah, I mean, I do think they get by Clemson, although, like we just talked about, Clemson played as impressive a game as there was in the tournament. They beat Auburn by 31. But let's say they get by them, and then they likely have to face Duke, because I think Syracuse's little run here ends against Duke. That's where the true test is, because, you know, Duke has more skill. Duke has more players that are going to go on and play at the next level. For me, for Kansas, and I guess, look, you could say this about a lot of teams, but it comes down to whether or not two things. One, how effective is Udoka Azubuike, their big seven-footer who's been limited with a sprained left MCL? He played in the first two games, but he wasn't at 100%. So now that you've got another couple practices and some more time under his belt, is he back to 100%? That changes things. And then the second thing is, can they hit their outside shots? Because they're a 40% three-point shooting team, but they struggled to hit their open looks against Penn, and they weren't much better against Seton Hall. If they can get the shots dropping from outside, particularly with Svi Mykhailiuk and the guy you mentioned, obviously the headliner, Devontae Graham, you get those two knocking down shots, and you get Azubuike more effective in the post, then this is a Kansas team that, yes, can make a run under Bill Self and get to a national championship game. And look, you and I talked about it last week. Kansas fans expect national titles. The last one in 2008 was 10 years ago, and they are thirsty for another one. So I think for Kansas, a loss next round and a loss in the Elite Eight, for Kansas fans, I'm not saying this is how it should be, but they would view that as a disappointment. They expect Final Four bust. And they do have the team to do it, but like we said, they need to hit shots and they need to get Azubuike going inside.
Brandon Gawden, Westwood One and Big Ten Network with us on the bench again. And when we come back, we're going to break down the great games that he's calling in Hot Town in that South region this week. He's got Loyola, Chicago, Nevada, boy, are those two teams worthy of some conversation. That's going to be a hell of a basketball game, if you ask me. And Kansas State, can they handle the kids from Lexington and John Calipari? We'll talk about those matchups next with Brandon Gaudin. Brandon Gaudin is doing the games on Westwood One. He's doing the Atlanta South region. He starts it all off tomorrow night at 7:07 Eastern time at the Hub, Phillips Arena, where I used to call Thrashers games. It used to be a hockey and NBA arena when they opened it up. But they're going to be playing basketball there tomorrow night. Loyola, the Ramblers against Nevada, the Pack from Reno. And boy, has Musselman done a job with that team. As you're preparing for that game, Brandon, has there been anything you've seen quite like that defense coming back from 22 down against maybe the best defensive team in the country, Cincinnati, or at least top three, you know, with stats, number two officially? They were a great defensive unit, and I have never seen like a meltdown like that in my life. How did they do that to that Cincinnati team and score and come back and win that game?
It was crazy. And by the way, that's the second biggest comeback in NCAA tournament history. And when they were down that much, I thought they were dead to rights for a couple of reasons. One, because of what you mentioned, Cincinnati's defense. Two, Nevada has a six-man rotation. Six. They play six guys. That's it. And so you just figured, gosh, they had to come back 14 down in round one to beat Texas. So you thought, oh, they are just going to run out of gas. But Nevada, despite only having six players, likes to play fast. They average 83 points a game. And they got Cincinnati going at their tempo late. And Cincinnati started getting all out of whack. They started to bicker with one another, and it slowly started to come off the tracks. And once Nevada got that down to 10, you could just see it in their eyes. They smelled blood in the water. And Cincinnati never just regained control. They just kept slipping and slipping and slipping, and then Nevada got that bucket to go up late. And when they scored with 9 seconds left, Scott, that was their only lead of the game. So get this. In round one against Texas, Nevada led for 4 minutes. In round two against Cincinnati, they led for 9 seconds. So they've led for 4 minutes and 9 seconds in this tournament. But that's the beauty of this tournament. They're on to the Sweet 16, and they're going to play a Loyola team that they can go up and down, but they don't like to go up and down as much as Nevada. So tempo is going to be really important in this one.
So Moser talked about how they have shooters, they have guys that can put it on the deck, they have guys who can post you up, they switch a lot. Do you agree with that? Is that like when you heard him talk about that? Is that what you think of them? Because I was watching them and I'm thinking, these twins are their worst nightmare. You can talk about all that other stuff, but like if you can't stop these two twins, you start seeing double, and then they're both lighting you up. That's a problem.
Yeah, and they are twins. I mean, they're both 6'7", 205. Their hairstyles are identical. One wears 10, one wears 11. Cody is 1 minute older than Caleb. But, yeah, Caleb averages 19 points a game, 5 rebounds. Cody gives him 14 points, 6 rebounds, and a team-best 5 assists a game. So if one is not scoring, the other does. One is a great shooter, and that is Caleb. Cody is more of a slasher and a driver and an assist guy. But you're right. They are together. They are the head of that snake for the Wolfpack, and stopping them is key. They're not the only piece. They've got another guy named Jordan Caroline who's dumping in 17 and 9 a game, who's very good. But the two Martin boys are the head of that snake. But it's just no one has really had success stopping those guys this year. I mean, Nevada's 29-7, and you can sit there and say, well, they're in the Mountain West. It's not like they're in the ACC. That's fine. But if you look at their losses, all but one of their losses was by 7 points or less. So they have been right there in every game. No one has been able to shut those Martin twins down. Loyola certainly has their hands full.
I got to tell you, at this Loyola team, this freshman, Krutwig, the center, the big white boy, he's got a little flub going. He's got some muscle on him, and he's kind of, banging and slow, but he's got like a real great pivot foot, move. He can get you up in the air, and then he spins, and he does a spin cycle, you know, drag with his pivot foot. Have you seen him make these moves in the paint? I mean, the guy can flat out put it in the hole, 6'9", 260. He's a load, and I love the way he uses his feet to get people up in the air and his pump fakes, and he puts the ball in.
That's what's amazing. You're right. It's so deceptive. I was just watching that game against Tennessee, and it's his footwork. You wouldn't think a guy that big could move that well, but he does. And he actually came to campus, Scott, at 295 pounds, lost 35 pounds, and they asked him, they said, what was the toughest part of losing weight? He said, I had to give up my late-night Oreos and milk. But he did that. He got down to 260, and it's made him even more nimble. And as you said, he's the conference freshman of the year. And he's a little bit of an X factor because when they can get him touches inside and he has to keep those defenders inside honest, it opens things up outside for their shooters, and they shoot 40% from outside the arc. So Loyola is a very competent team offensively, very balanced, five guys in double figures. To me, you know, this game is, I know a lot of people might look at it and say, oh, Loyola, Nevada, and Atlanta, who's going to be at that? Who cares? This is a fun game. This is what makes the tournament great, and I can't wait to be a part of it.
I mean, the kid Richardson and Custer. Custer's really their three banger, 46%, but the other kid can also hit that three, and if he's on, he can hit it over 40% too. Like, he's 38 on the year, but he can get hot too. Like, if you leave those two, Custer and Richardson, open, I mean, Loyola's gonna have problems, or I mean Nevada.
Yeah, because they've got, like we said, they've got five in double figures, so they can hit you a number of different ways. Richardson too is their best defender. He's the conference defensive player of the year. So he's going to be really busy on the other end because he's going to get some tough assignments. I'm sure they're going to switch a lot, just like Nevada does. I'll be interested to see how Porter Moser defends the Wolfpack, see what he does with the ball screens. But whatever he does, Ben Richardson is going to be busy and very key on both ends of the floor. And you look, these teams, it's not like Kentucky, who I know we're going to talk about with all their freshmen. These teams, while they do have some transfers, we're talking about juniors and seniors, some war horses that have been through a lot of battles. And so, again, that's another thing that just makes this a fun, fun basketball game.
You know, that Brandon Gaudin with us, he's calling the Atlanta South region. He starts it all off with that Loyola game. And then you finish it with Kentucky and K-State. I love watching this kid, Gilgeous Alexander, Kevin Knox, Nick Richards. They can all flat-out play. It just seems like every year it doesn't matter. He could put I think he could put children out there, little five-year-olds, and they'd make it to the Final Four. It's unbelievable how he just coaches for one thing, and that's the tournament. All year doesn't even matter. It's all about when it comes time for the tournament time, forget it. This guy gets his guys ready.
Well, today when I had him back there for an interview, the first question I said was, you know, you've done this a long time, and you have been in a lot of these tournament situations, but you're often coaching a new crop of kids who have never tasted the NCAA tournament. And I basically asked him, to your point, what do you do to get these guys ready? And he said, I start talking about the NCAA tournament when they arrive on campus and when we start practice in October. And he said, that's what we are playing for. That's what these kids came here for, to win a national championship. So he said, by the time the NCAA tournament actually gets here, they've heard me hammer home what it's like, what you need to do to be successful, what you need to do on 48-hour prep to get ready for another game, to get your body ready. I mean, you're right. He hammers that home to these kids, and that's what they want to do. They want to come. They want to win a national championship. And right now, under the current one-and-done system, they want to go on to the NBA. And look, they had their hiccups in early February. They lost four straight games, first time that's ever happened in 9 years under Cal. And since then, they're 9-1, and they look so good in the SEC tournament. They looked really good closing against Buffalo. And Kansas State, I don't know. This is going to be a really, really tough matchup for Bruce Weber, because while they won their first two games and did so with great defensive effort, they're going to need more offensively if they want to knock off Kentucky.
Well, I mean, if, you know, Dean Wade comes back with the stress fracture in his foot, I mean, honestly, like, I'm not expecting the guy to run up and down like a gazelle up and down the floor, but, I mean, let's face facts. The kid can flat-out shoot. Like, can't he just stand there on the wing and pop J's? Because I think he can actually do that and help him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they have to have him. But they kept saying during the first two rounds that he was available for emergency minutes. And, you know, you're in a tight game with Creighton and then in a tight game with UMBC, and I kept saying, well, I don't know. These look like emergency minutes to me, and he didn't play. So while they are saying that there's a very good chance he could play, Dean Wade said yesterday there's a 98% chance I'm going to play. You wonder if he's going to be at full capacity. Now, I agree that Dean Wade at 75% is better than no Dean Wade at all, and he makes it so Kentucky has to honor him on the scouting report and possibly opens things up for others. But I just don't know what version of Dean Wade we're going to get. When he's out there, he's their leading scorer and their leading rebounder. So, yes, that's important. But one other thing let's not forget, Kentucky for the last five games has been playing without Jared Vanderbilt, and he is their leading rebounder at 8 rebounds a game. 6'9 freshman gives him another body inside. And a lot of people, although Cal hasn't said it specifically, a lot of people think Vanderbilt might come back and play tomorrow. So that will certainly also give Kentucky a boost. That is something not to be overlooked.
I think a lot of people are mad that K-State beat Baltimore County in that ugly game on Sunday. But listen, they got it done, and I thought they did it with those 13 steals. If they can do that kind of handwork on Kentucky with all their speed and talent and quickness, if they could get 7 to 10 steals off of that bunch, they might very well be in that game. Brandon, great stuff tonight. I can't wait to hear you calling the games in Atlanta at Phillips. You kick off the entire regional weekend with the first game tomorrow night. I know you'll do a stellar job as always. I'm glad you're calling all these exciting games. I love you for always checking in on the bench to talk about all the big matchups and games you're doing. I know how busy you are. I really appreciate you.
Glad to be on, man. Thanks, and enjoy the games.
There he is, Brandon Gawden.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.